person who was supposed to lead couldn't lead tonight, and of course, it being Kim, who I absolutely adore, I get to, you know, introduce Kim.
Thank you. I am Kim, compulsive overeater. Thank you. I hadn't really planned on this, so I guess it'll just be whatever it's meant to be. First time I ever qualified, I asked somebody, what do I do? Should I write it out? Should I make an outline? Should I have like cards? And they said, you know, I like to, about 10 minutes before I lead, just kind of pray and meditate and ask God for his words. And I said, okay, thanks. And then I went and I asked someone else, what do you think I should do? And they said the same thing. Oh, about 10 minutes before, I just pray and ask for God's words. So I've done the prayer part. So if you like what I say, thank him. And if you don't like what I say, tell him. In Florida is where my story begins, and it was about 1995, I think, I hit my bottom. I was 354 pounds, unhappy, depressed. My mother was dying of cancer. My house was trashed. There was a path that led from the front door to the bedroom, and off of that, another path that led to the bathroom. And my typical Friday night was two large pizzas and a bottle of whatever. And it was always eating, always thinking about eating. I taught school, and I couldn't wait for the kids to go to PE or art or someplace so I could get into the treats bag. You know, that stuff I only bought for them a lot because I kept eating it. And it was just constant food. It was, you know, you don't get to be 354 pounds without consuming a lot of calories. And I would eat until I just hurt, and eat until I thought, my stomach is actually going to split if I continue like this. And I would stop eating long enough for the extreme pain to go away, and then I'd eat some more. And that would be in the same night. So it was just constant food. A lot of sweets, a lot of the salty crunchies, but it just was, I couldn't stop once I got started, and I never understood that until after I came into OA, and they explained it, and the first time I read something about food addiction or about sugar addiction or however you want to phrase it, the first time I read that description of once I started, I couldn't stop, I said, that's me. I also heard somebody describe it as, I really wanted the first one, but if I had that, I had to have the second one. And that's how I explained the difference to my husband, because he once tried to understand. And he said, you know, I saw them put out a tray of goodies, and I couldn't stop thinking about the goodies until I went and got one. I said, ah, but you stopped after the one. That satisfied you. That would never satisfy me. I could not stop until the tray was empty. And then I'd probably drive home on the way and stop and pick up more stuff to keep it going, because that's how I ate. And it was just, I didn't understand it. Nobody else that I knew behaved that way. But as soon as I came in here and I heard people talking, I said, I get it. So in 95, my house is trashed, I weigh 354 pounds, my mother's dying of cancer, and I hit bottom. And I had decided to kill myself, and I had a plan. There was this cliff in Pensacola, Florida, the flattest place in the world, has a big old cliff. And a lot of teenage boys and drunk drivers don't make the stop at the bottom of that hill, and they go over the edge and into the bay, and I decided that would be a good accident that I could have. But I had to get my house cleaned up first, because I had too much pride to let my parents or anybody else see the house that way. And not too much pride to live that way, but too much pride for anyone to see it. So it took me a long time to get that house cleaned up, and by then I didn't want to kill myself, thank God. But I tell you how bad it can be. I lived two winters with my house this way. I lived two winters, well, longer than that, but two winters without gas, because the They were working on the gas on my street, which was only a block long, and they had to cut off the gas to all the houses in order to do that. And in order to turn the gas back on, they had to come in and check the pilot lights. Well, I wasn't letting anyone in my house. I just never called them. I never let them in. So I lived without gas for 2 winters. And you think, well, it's Florida, not that big a deal. It snowed both winters, so it was cold. Mm-hmm. I had no way to heat water, no way to cook other than my microwave. How crazy is that? Was my life unmanageable? Yeah, it was pretty unmanageable. It was just sad. The whole thing was sad. But if you ask me, how are you doing? I was always cheerful. Fine. Everything's fine. How are you? And it wasn't fine. I lived to work and eat and go home, and that was it. So in 95, my mother passed away, and it was kind of like this catalyst. In 98, when people ask, how did you get to New Jersey? I always say midlife crisis, because that's the short version. They don't want to hear all this stuff that I'm making you listen to tonight. But in 98, I had lost some weight. I was feeling good about myself, and I moved to Indiana, and then I ended up moving to New Jersey. By Christmas of 98, I was here. And I needed to find a place to live, and I started gaining, I gained all my weight back. I'm now 350 pounds, all but 4 pounds I gained back. And at 350 pounds, I'm looking for an apartment, and of course I think no one's going to want to live with me. But I found two people looking for a roommate. And they said, we'd like you to move in with us. And I was so surprised that anybody would want to live with me. I'm 350 pounds. My weight defined who I am for the longest time. My weight was complete. Everything, it was like I was walking around with this giant umbrella, and the umbrella was my weight, and it just shadowed and covered everything about my life. It determined my self-worth, which was not very high. And I was so surprised that they wanted me to live with them. Well, as it turns out, one was in OA and the other one was in AA. Mm-hmm. Could it have been any better? It was like living in a rehab. And the one who was in OA had this beautiful, sexy body, and she said, would you like to go to OA with me? Sure. It works. So I came to OA down in Red Bank, and that was in 98. I got my dates mixed up. Anyway, 98, in April of 98 was my start time. And I took to it right away. I loved it. And it loved me, and it fit, and I was getting it, and I got a sponsor. It's so fun to watch the hand of God in your life. I didn't believe in God at that time, but I had to start looking, because the 12 steps told me, if you don't have a higher power, you're not going to succeed. So I was willing to even look for a higher power. And so one of the ways that I saw the hand of God work through it is the first time the We Care book went around at my first meeting, I didn't put my name in because I don't want people calling me. I can't tell them anything. How egotistical. I thought they would call and ask me questions. And I was supposed to give them advice. So the second time, by now I understand it, the second time I put my phone number in there, and I saw the name of the person I wanted to call and talk to. And before I could make the phone call the next day, she called me. And it's just beautiful the way God moves through. God had the person I wanted to be my sponsor called me, and she started me off right away. And she started me off on the steps. She was a step sponsor. That's the way she worked it. She gave me a food plan. Eventually, I accepted her food plan, but I fought it at first. And then after a major binge of sugar, I called her up and I said, what was that food plan? And on that food plan and using the steps and working the tools and doing everything else, I had lost 150 pounds. So I got down to 200 pounds by the year 2000, and I was feeling really good. And I ended up meeting my husband and getting married. And then slowly but surely, I started gaining weight. A little bit at a time. The first year, it's only 10 pounds. My God, I've lost 150. It's only 10 pounds. I could do 10 pounds. That's a weekend. And then the next year, it's only 10 pounds. It's 20 pounds. I've still lost 130. See, I'm doing this whole measurement game. And it's not like I was binging. I wasn't eating mass quantities. It wasn't two large pizzas. It was a little bit, an extra of that. And the next year it was 10 pounds. It's only 10 pounds. Now we're at 30 pounds. And this goes on, and I could keep on going until eventually I've gained back 100 pounds. And I'm thinking, holy crap, I can't. And I knew that I was struggling. Struggling. The truth was I was in relapse, but I didn't know it. I truly didn't, because it didn't look like what I used to do before OA. It wasn't bags of and boxes of and entire bottles of. It wasn't a half gallon of. That to me was binging. That to me was relapse. But it was an extra serving of, a little bit of this of. I gained 100 pounds, a teaspoon and a tablespoon at a time, or a handful at a time. And so I truly, for the longest time, didn't realize that I was in relapse. And then when I did, I didn't know how to get out of it. And I tried so many things. I went to, one of the best things is I never truly left OA. When I was in New York, my meetings got really thin. But I never truly left. Either service would keep me connected, friends would keep me connected. I still did my daily 10th step, and I still shared it with two other people, my buddies, because I knew that this was the only place that had the answer. We've all tried the other stuff. We've all tried the weigh and pay. We've tried the clubs. We've tried the special pills and the this and the that and the only eat on days with a tea in it or whatever. You know, we tried all that, and I knew none of that worked. I knew it didn't work, and still I was working, struggling and trying this and trying that, even within the parameters. I would try whatever you said was working, and I'd try whatever you said worked. And I kept at it, and I just thought, I'm spiritually, it's got to be a spiritual solution, because I can't seem to get it together. Finally, I don't know when, but it was a good 10 years afterwards, after gaining the weight, I decided to go into therapy, and I did some work, because there was this black hole that I just could not figure out, and I didn't know what to do about it. And working the steps hadn't cleared it up. The fourth step hadn't cleared it up. I didn't know what it was. It was just there. It was that sadness or that pain that has lived with me most of my life. And yeah, I felt that pain since I was 5. That's some of my earliest memories of sitting in kindergarten and thinking, I don't get it. I don't get it. And it's not the schoolwork I didn't get. It was life. I don't get life. I don't get what they get. They all seem comfortable, and they all seem to understand, and they all seem to have a grasp on what the world is, and I don't get it. I never felt comfortable in my own skin. I didn't feel comfortable in my life. And so I had managed to cover up a lot of that, and I had uncovered a lot of that with the inventories and with the steps, and I had learned a lot about myself and learned to react differently. But there was still this thing, and I realized that it was this, I call it my core issue, because I didn't have a name for it, but it felt like it was in my core. And so I went to therapy, and we did a lot of work on childhood, the way we do. And I found my way through it. I still didn't get abstinent, but I found my way through it. And I worked, and that ball of pain kind of shrank and shrank and shrank and shrank. And eventually, I said, you know what, thank you. I think this has been really good for me. And I left therapy. And I kept at this, and I kept working on the spiritual. I finally said, I need to get another sponsor. My sponsor had dropped me because she realized I just wasn't making it. And I called and I asked someone to be my sponsor. I said, I think I need to work on the spiritual. I've been abstinent now for a year, year and a half or so. And I'm losing the weight. And I feel like I've really worked on the emotional by going to therapy for a year and a half. So now I think I need to work on the spiritual. And she was very kind and very gracious. And she said, let's do it. And here again, one of those God things. I had had to drop a sponsee that I talked to at 8:15 in the morning. And my new sponsor said, I can talk to you, but there's only one time that I have available. 8:15. It's like perfect. She was meant to be. And since then, I've really been working on the spiritual, and I can feel the things shifting. I can feel myself learning to react differently. I can feel myself being willing to live differently and react differently. The old behaviors still pop up. The old way of thinking, that hypersensitivity. If I see someone that has a kind of a sour look on their face, I no longer assume it's me that's caused the problem. I no longer assume that they're thinking about me. And even if they are, that's their reaction. It doesn't have to be my reaction. So I'm learning to change the way I live. I no longer, excuse me, I no longer think of myself as my weight. And what I have done is I've learned that the relapse is a gift. Because what I learned in that relapse as I gained 100 pounds is that I'm still lovable. My husband did not leave me. My husband did not ever say, oh, you're just too fat, I can't deal with this. I discovered that people still wanted to be around me even though I was 100 pounds heavier. I discovered that I still did a good job at work even at 100 pounds heavier. And that, I think, is why I had to go through the relapse. I believe that that was the lesson I needed to learn, is that I am a worthy person, not because of my weight or not because of the lack of my weight. I'm a worthy person just because I am, as we all are. We all are. I believe that the spark of my higher power is within me, and that alone is enough to make me a worthy person and a worthwhile person. And the spark of your higher power is within you, and that makes us all worthy. But I didn't know that before I gained the 100 pounds. I just wish it hadn't taken 10 years to figure it out. My God, I was just getting so miserable. But it takes what it takes. And when we hit our bottom, there's always somebody around us to help us come back up. You know, at the end of this meeting, we're going to say, I put my hand in yours, and that hand can reach down just as easily as it can reach out. And there were hands there ready to pick me up when I was ready to get up. And I think that to me was the gift of my relapse, was that I found out that I'm a worthy, worthwhile person. I had a lot of other lessons along the way, and they just, if we're willing to work and talk to each other and be open to things, then we can get there one little step at a time, the same way I got to 305 pounds one tablespoon at a time. But anyway, I thank you for letting me share. And tonight, well, I'll tell you a little something, then she doesn't even know it. When I was looking around for a new sponsor, I couldn't decide what to do, but I knew this person had just recently lost a couple of important people in her life. And I knew she had what I wanted, so I thought about calling her. And I said, well, if this call doesn't work, I'm calling this one, because I think that that would be an excellent sponsor for me. So, Sarita, lucky for you, the first call was available at 8:15. Otherwise, I would have been calling for you for help. So, since she's not my sponsor, we're going to make her share her story and help her celebrate tonight. Come on down.